I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, and then I'll just do a little introduction and then we'll just sort of have a half hour chat.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds fantastic.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the NK Active podcast. Really excited about the guest we have on this month. We have Claire Maxted, who you may have heard of before because she co-founded the Trail Running magazine and now founded World Ginger Running. And she's someone who's basically literally been there, done that, worn a t-shirt when it comes to trail running. And she, I think it was in 2021, released a book called The Ultimate Trail Running Handbook, which is actually a really nice guide about how to get into trail running. And actually, it's a really useful tip about running in general. So, Claire, many thanks for coming on board and taking time out of your schedule to come chat to us.
So,
tell listeners about just a bit of background about how you've got to where you are today.
Well, I'm not a natural runner. If a 15-year-old me could have seen this book and knew that I was the editor of a trail running magazine and that I would regularly run, you know, like marathons and more, do the Bob Graham round, then I think I would have just fallen over in a faint because I hated running when I was at school. At school, running was, it was presented as something competitive. There was like house cross country, there was the bleep test, there was house athletics as well. And because I was like, you know, I wasn't like the fittest kid around, but I wasn't like super unfit or anything. I was quite active and I was quite like a nice kid at school. The teachers used to just force me to do everything. So I think one year I was doing the 1500 meters, the 800 meters, the 200 meters, and the long jump or something. And I just hated it because being ginger, I was really pale skinned. I'd go bright red at the drop of a hat. The boys would like point at me and go, "Oh, Claire Max has gone red already," like that. And when you're like 13, 15, 17, that's not the kind of attention you want from boys. And I just hated that feeling. House cross country in the winter was, it was really cold. So you'd breathe in and you'd get that blood taste in your mouth. And everything about running seemed to be about pushing yourself as hard as you could, going as fast as you can. And granted, it probably wasn't long distances compared to what I do now, but just everything about running just wasn't fun. It was like really horrible. And teachers used to be there on the sideline shouting and people like be like, knees up, and can't you pick your feet up a bit faster? And it was all about criticism and beating yourself up and like being told off. And it just wasn't good. And I really hope that PE at school has changed these days, because I don't think that it's necessarily a good introduction to sport and exercise and well-being for a lot of people that aren't naturally sporty. So I think I'm very lucky that I found running in another way as an adult. I basically got a bit fat at uni because I drank too much beer and enjoyed myself too much. So the quickest way to burn the most calories is running. So I started running again at uni. I was always a really keen hiker, an outdoors person. We used to go on mountain biking holidays when I was younger with my mum and dad. I used to swim a lot as well. I was like quite good at swimming. I'm probably in all the sports, probably best at swimming, but I do it the least. But I wanted to do a triathlon. So, and I wanted to do adventure racing as well. So I had to get my running up to speed. So I started running again at uni, and it was just, first of all, just like 20 minutes. And at the start, I thought it was like, oh my God, I've got to go really fast. I thought running was about this, run, 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 run. And then I discovered jogging, and what a wonderful thing jogging is. you can cover a lot of miles and be very happy just jogging. So yeah, I think I'd probably say I'm a jogger rather than a runner.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell. That's how I got into running again, because I wanted to work off my beer gut.
And actually, running is a really, really nice way of doing things. After a night out as well.
Yeah. You can clear all the toxins from the body, sweat it all out.
I've actually had some of my quickest runs the morning after the night before. I think there's something to be said in there. So it is almost like, it sounds like, yeah, you didn't intend to getting to the sort of trail running. You sort of just stumbled across it and then got hooked. And that story I hear so often in clinic.
That's
with
really
patients.
Sad, isn't it?
And it's really, you do touch on a very, very good point with regards to sports and children. And it is, there can be this very competitive nature to it. But one of the beauties about running, and particularly trail running, is actually when you get down to it, no one really cares if you finish first or finish last. You're there just doing it, having fun with a group of like-minded people. And sometimes, yes, you're racing against yourself. Sometimes you want to be competitive, which is all good. But it's also just as acceptable just to go and do stuff at your own pace.
Yeah.
And if you take park run, for example, this fantastic thing of 5K every Saturday morning, you've got some people that walk it, some people that run it. But the thing you notice, it doesn't matter if you're first or last, everyone is still cheering each other on. And it's just that community spirit of it.
Yeah. And even the last runners through, because everybody's finished by then. So there's loads more people stay and cheer them on. And it's even more kudos if you've put way more effort in, if you're a larger person or if you're a less fit person or if you're an older person, all of those things, that it's even more kudos to actually finish a park run.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think also now trail running is getting more and more popular, because I think people are starting to realize that trail running isn't nipping off to the Alps every weekend to run up and down a mountain. It actually could be done in the countryside.
Yeah,
UK. And okay, unfortunately, I've got the South Downs Way on my doorstep and whatnot. So there is actually loads of places. You've got the Peak District, the Lake District, you've got in the West Country, over in North, you've got loads of places where you can just get up and just go for a run in the woods and just do some trail running. And a lot of my patients say they enjoy it because they literally just don't have to think. They don't have to worry about things. They just go for a run. And it's a case of they're not really worried how long it takes them. And actually, they find it more exciting because there's always things to look at. So they don't sometimes get that boredom factor that you can get if you're just crunching miles on the road, mile after mile after mile. With trail running, there's always something different. So we'll have a quick chat about events that you have done. So I think you've just come back from UTMB.
Yeah, I didn't actually run the UTMB. Yeah. A little bit out of my current fitness level for sure. But yeah, I have just come back from UTMB. Yes. And I'm just coming back into running after having a baby. So taking it nice and gently, which is not usual for me.
No, it's once you got the bug, it's difficult to take that slow and steady run. And we have a saying in clinic that a runner who is not running is just a grumpy person.
Like, yeah, like definitely.
We do everything we can to keep runners running, even throughout injuries, if it's safe to do so, because a runner who doesn't run, they're just a grumpy person to deal with in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's not a good thing if you can't run.
So for the listener, is the what is the UTMB?
It's the Ultra Tour du Mont Blanc. It's just over 100 miles around Mont Blanc. So it starts in Chamonix, which is in France, and it goes through Italy and Switzerland as well. And it goes through up and over various mountain passes. I think there's like 8 or 10 significant uphills. So there's a total of 10,000 meters of ascent throughout the whole race. And they get 46 hours to do the race. It starts on the Friday evening in Chamonix in the main square. There's like 2,500 people ran all the various races of the UTMB. There's lots of different ones this year. I think about kind of 2,000 people run the actual UTMB, and it takes a good 3.5 minutes for them all to filter through. And it's, if you can imagine the London Marathon, if you've ever been to watch the London Marathon and the hype that's there at the start line and at the finish, and there's like people, like 10 people deep. It's like that at in Chamonix on race day and in all the little villages that it goes through. Everybody comes out to watch the event, even like non-runners support the event because it's just so exciting. The atmosphere is amazing. And they start at about 6 o'clock on the Friday night, and they run through the night, and the elites will come in at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, having run for 20 hours. Killian Jornet just broke the 20-hour record. He did like 19 hours 50 this year, which is amazing. And then the male runners come in soon after that. The women will come in the early afternoon, so like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, doing the race in like more like 24 hours. And and then everybody else comes in through the second night and then through to the Sunday morning and afternoon. And by 4 o'clock on Sunday, you've got the last person coming through. And the atmosphere for the last person is incredible, because that person has blood, sweat and tears. They're going to crawl over that finish line. They're going to make it by hook or by crook. So it's really exciting when the last person comes through. And because it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, people have had a beer and everyone's like, hey, and there's just huge cheerings. There's this song that plays on repeat. It's called the, what's it called? It's like the Evangelist. It's the Conquest of Paradise, and it just plays over and over again. It's very, very stirring. And if you watch enough people finish at the UTMB, you'll probably want to enter the UTMB. So there's a warning there. It's an amazing race to go and watch, but you might find yourself signing up for something that's quite big.
Just listening to you explain that, I'm like, damn, I got to do this at some point.
You've got to go and watch it at some point. And there are other races as well. So there's the MDS. No, that's Marathon Sable. MCC, that's it. MCC, CCC, OCC as well. So there's the CCC is half, the UTMB. The OCC is like a quarter, I think. And then the MCC, I think it's for the media. So that's like a 50K event or something like that. And then there's the TDS as well, which is even harder than the Ultra Tour de Mont Blanc, apparently. It's a bit rougher terrain, even though it's a little bit shorter and a little bit less ascent. It's like brutal, apparently. And then there's this ridiculous thing called the PTS, Le Petit Trot. So that's PST, PLT. Le Petit Trot, something like that. It's called the PLT or something, and it takes them 6 days, and they've got to take a helmet with them because they're going through such areas where rocks can fall on them. And you do it in teams, in pairs, so you get like these father son, mother daughter, husband and wife teams, or like friends, and they're coming in as well as the UTMB finishers are coming in. And you can tell that they're PTS or something like that, because they just look completely like Mount Feral mountain people. There, caked in mud, sweat, probably something ripped, half a shoe stuck on with gaffer tape. They've got poles, they've got helmets, they've got like this haggard look to their face, so they've probably slept for 2 hours a night for 6 days. And it's just an incredible achievement, and you just leave thinking, oh, could I do that? And then you think about the actual logistics of 100 miles through the mountains with 10,000 meters of ascent over like not just like over like a nice runnable terrain, great. It's all rocky. You can go over easily on your ankle, on your knee. It's really treacherous terrain. Like, I think actually somebody actually really sadly died on one of the races this year, which is an absolute tragedy. But that's the type of terrain we're talking about. Those are the mountain conditions we're talking about here. Not something to be taken lightly. But it's absolutely incredible achievement if you can do it. I don't think I could do it because I'm not sure that I could put in that level of training. Not sure that I want to. I don't know if I want to just run through the night and not really see any of the views. So how I would do the UTMB is like over 6 days, enjoying myself, doing like 20 miles a day. And even that would be an incredible achievement.
Oh yeah, I just want to reflect on one bit. 10,000 meters of ascent.
Yeah.
That is, just think about that. That's the equivalent of going for, if you just go for a normal 10K run, that's the distance you're going to go uphill throughout that event.
it's more than Everest from sea level, isn't it?
That's just insane.
And a lot of it is hiking as well. I spoke to the women's winner, Katie Scheid from the USA. I managed to interview her after the race, and she said, I said, what's your top tip for like normal people, more like me, who might want to do the UTMB one day? And she said, there's a lot of hiking. Go hiking. And Jasmine Paris, who's another amazing ultra runner, she won Spine Race outright 1 year, and I think she still holds the record on that race. She said she goes hiking at altitude for 2 weeks at a time with a huge backpack on, camping with her husband. Less so now, she's got kids presumably, but that's how she used to do a lot of her training, up high at altitude hiking. And that's brilliant to know, because if you're a person that gets regularly injured, like some of the people who might be watching today from the associated with your podcast, hiking is like who hears of hikers talking about injuries unless they're super old and they've got knee replacements and stuff? You hardly ever hear hikers talking about injuries, but you always hear about runners talking about injuries. So that, to think that hiking can be part of your training with a nice big backpack on, with walking poles, just nice and slow, taking it easy, looking at the views, isn't that brilliant?
It is. And funny, I had a patient in yesterday, and they were doing an event I hadn't heard of, which is Race to the Wreck.
I've heard of Race to the Stones.
Yeah, I've heard of Race to the King, Race to the Stones.
Is it part of the Threshold Events series, or is it something different?
This is in the Namibia Desert, I believe it is.
Oh, right.
There's it looks like there's just a shipwreck in the middle of the desert that they
run.
Yeah, I know. And it's over, I think she said, around a couple of hundred kilometers.
Okay.
And you sat there going to be thinking, race there, let's have a look. And
I'm Googling it now.
And it was a part of her training. We were speaking about the injury she come in with, and we need to basically just help get her ready to race, because she's going in November. So she's only got 8 weeks until race day.
Oh, and it's a rat race event. I've just found it.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and but she spent a lot of time over the summer hiking, with just in a camper van, hiking in the Lake District, hiking all around those areas.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the event, it is a walk run event.
Yeah.
And then it's even like you say, like questions around about the pack you have. So actually, are you training with the equivalent weight that you're going to be carrying on race day and everything on those lines? And those are really, really important things that you need to consider, I think, when you're training for these events.
And hiking's such an important one, because I DNF'd the Cape Wrath Ultra in 2018, and there was a lot of hiking involved, and my training had just involved running like 20 mile runs. Like I did a 100 mile training week, doing 20 miles a day for 5 days, and I thought, yeah, brilliant, I'm sorted, I can do this race. But actually, when I got there was a shed load of hiking involved, and I hadn't really trained for hiking. And it sounds silly, because obviously if you can run, you think you can hike, but it's two quite different disciplines actually. I've taken that into account, and I might do something big like at the end of this next summer, and I haven't quite decided yet. I haven't spoken to family and like sorted it yet, but hiking should be a big part of all ultra runners training if you're going to do one of these like big events like that. Yeah. um but it does take a lot of time to go hiking. it takes a big chunk of time, doesn't it, to do hiking training?
And any ultra event.
Yeah.
Any ultra event takes huge amounts of commitment and training. Yeah. And it is, I remember I was speaking to a patient who does full distance Ironman event, and it's the training for that is effectively a full time job. If you want to train properly, it's a full time job to be able to.
24 hours a week, isn't it, to be good at that?
Yeah, crazy. So obviously, UTMB is sort of one end of the scale. There's going to be people. They're going to be people watching and listening. What about any tips and advice for people at the other end of the scale who are just sort of starting it? Because yes, it sounds fabulous doing UTMB, but I should imagine if you've never done any trail running, it could be a little daunting to think about.
A little bit daunting, yeah. No, I wouldn't suggest starting at the UTMB. I'd suggest going to watch the UTMB and hiking in the mountains. That's absolutely brilliant. And the great thing about going to Chamonix is you can get a cable car up to the top and then just run about in the beautiful scenery and then get a cable car down again. So that's brilliant. So it's good. It's a really great place for all levels. Don't think like you have to do the UTMB. But I started with this set of events called the Lakeland Trails, which still run, and there's loads more events now. But they were, it was about 9 to 11 miles I used to do, and they've got two categories. Well, they did at the time that I was doing them about 10 years ago. They have like the walkers category, which starts off an hour earlier, and then they have the runners category, which goes and then you overtake all the walkers, which is quite nice because you can say hello to everybody and they all cheer you on. And if you're a slow runner, you also might want to go in the walkers category just because it might just suit you to be within that sort of time frame. So they're really brilliant events. They're in the Lake District, hence why they're called the Lakeland Trails. And they were set up by a sort of an acquaintance friend of mine, Graham Patton, who was a really good European mountain runner. And he saw the atmosphere and the sort of pizzazz of the European races, and he wanted to bring that back to the UK. So at those races, you get a real family festival atmosphere. They take place in a big field with parking nearby. You've got a bouncy castle, ice cream van, food stalls, stuff for the kids to do, little kids races around the field, which is really cute. And then you've got a balladed drumming band, you know, those like bands, which really is a fantastic way to start the race. A lot of races do it now, but they were the first people to really bring that out in the UK. And you start off and you're all G'd up and then you all go and it's brilliant. And some people, will take it really seriously and they'll properly like jet off in front and they'll win the race, whatever, get a course record, whatever. But so many other people are just jogging along, chatting to their friends, taking selfies. There's a really good family festival, friendly, supportive atmosphere at those races. And then because it ends in the field, you often do like a lap of half the field to come back to finish. So you've got people just hanging around eating some food, like families, everyone's family will cheer you on. And there's groups of people, whoever's finished already, they'll be like mooching around with their free meal, having them with their medal, and they'll be cheering everyone on. So you do this lap of the field and you really feel like royalty finishing, because it's just such a great way to finish a race. You feel really buoyed up by it. It's like a mini UTMB in a way. So I really recommend those events if you've never done a trail running event before. And they're different to road races, trail races, because road races you get a lot of very serious people looking at their watch, pace, doing it for a time, whereas trail races, people are doing it for an experience, for just being out in the mountainside in a safe way. So the course is fully waymarked usually, so you don't have to navigate. You've got marshals, you've got aid stations, and it's just a really nice way to experience a different place. You can do trail races like this. It says races in the Peak District in Wales, in Cornwall, in the Lake District in Scotland. And if you go to a beginner to intermediate level one, they will all be waymarked usually. You can check on the website, but they're all waymarked. So it's a great way to explore the countryside without having too many mountain skills. Obviously you've got to take the mandatory kit with you, but it's a good way to be handheld through the mountains and just get your experience up. So really recommend races, not for races' sake, but just for exploring the world.
Well, and there are some really wonderful, weird and wacky ones, and a lot of them tend to be in Wales as well. Some of my colleagues have done Man versus Horse,
Yeah, Ricky Lightfoot just broke the record, just beat the horse on that, didn't he? First time for many years.
Yeah, and that's the scary thing is what's fabulous about that race is that there's a prize if you win, and it goes up every year. So next year, if someone beats the horse, the prize pot isn't as big because
you already won it. Beating it next year. Yeah,
but that's just a crazy event of who come up with the idea. It must have been founded in the pub, I reckon. It must have been.
Oh, must have been. Yeah, all those crazy races, like the wife. Oh, actually, the wife carrying has got a very sinister history. So the wife carrying originated in Sweden or Finland or one of those Scandinavian places, and it was because in the olden days, rival tribes would go and raid the tribe's women and carry them off to be their wives.
Okay,
like, that's like traumatic. But now it's like this fun event where you can carry any old woman, or anyone can be your wife, actually anyone light can be your wife, and you just carry them. And there's the wife carrying events, so that's a bit,
and
a
I
bit
think in that race
top idea a bit more sinister.
Isn't that race the winner of that wins their wife in beer.
Yeah, and then there's the cheese rolling as well. That's definitely a villagey type affair, isn't it, where they all like chase a cheese down the hill, and there's that girl that's won it like four times because she literally just hurls herself down. People have broken arms, legs, heads. People are in casualty after that every year.
I have seen a few patients who have broken legs and ankles because of the cheese rolling.
Really?
Event.
Because of cheese rolling? Wow. It's, goodness.
It's
that's brutal. Commitment, isn't it?
It is. For that one, it's a case of you've just got to commit to it, and just it's almost you're in the lap of the gods. You fingers crossed and just hope for the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
So then also then you published, was it your first book?
Yes, it's my first book. I've written many things for many magazines, but yeah, my first book, and it was actually really easy to write because I've been writing the same thing for like 7 years in magazines, and it was such a relief to sort of get it all into one place so that it was just there forever in this one place. So I really enjoyed writing it.
No, and I got my copy next to me, but if I put it up, the background, it doesn't, the blue
match, yeah, you'll have to hold it right in front of you like that. Won't it. If you hold it in your body, then it'll get it.
There you go. And it is. What I liked about the book was how easy reading it was, and how it was filled with very small but informative little tidbits along the way, and just little self-help bits, especially around footwear. Like, actually, I tell patients all day, every day, the best footwear is the shoes you find just most comfortable. And what your best friend wears doesn't mean it's going to be the same shoe that you like. So it is a case of just, you've got to kiss a few frogs, as it were, before you find the prince with some of the shoes.
Definitely. I'm still kissing frogs. I don't know if you can see behind me, but I've got like 25 shoes. I still haven't found the perfect pair, and I'm a shoe tester.
I've got to the point where I have to order shoes to work. And then I bring them home. My wife's like, another pair of shoes, Nick. And then there's also the element of I do testing for different footwear companies. So often I will get sent shoes to try and then feedback on my opinion on them from a sort of a podiatric viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And then so now I have to say, I did try saying once that this company sent me a pair of shoes. I said, yeah, they sent me a pair of shoes. And then a week later, I did say they also sent me an invoice that I had to pay for those shoes as well.
That's mean. If you're getting
It is because those shoes I'd actually paid for, and I tried to get away with my wife saying I didn't.
Oh, you tried to say it to your wife. Oh, I get you.
Yeah. So I am. I got a bit of a footwear issue as well.
I think we all have as runners, but we should buy less shoes because of the environmental impact of a shoe. I just read Damien Hall's book about being more eco-friendly, and shoes are very bad. But this is my service to people. If I try them all on, then hopefully it gives everybody else better opinion on it to make the first choice correctly. I still haven't found a pair that perfectly fits me. So I really like a wide fit shoe. So I really love Altra and Topo. But they also, because they're more of a natural kind of thing going on, they all like this whole zero drop business. Uh-huh. And I can't run loads and loads of miles in zero drop. So I just really wish that they would make a shoe. Well, maybe I could put an insole in, like a Heely bit. Maybe I could make them like more like 6 mil in that way. Oh, I'll have to try that, actually. I'll speak to you about that.
Separately. Yeah.
I haven't found the perfect pair yet. And also,
I work with a company called Hilo. Now, they don't make trail shoes. They make running shoes. But their shoes are, they actually put more carbon back into the planet. They offset more than they actually take out.
Well, that's cool.
And
what's their name? Sorry?
Hilo, Hylo.
Okay.
Very open about, they literally, for their carbon footprint, they won't just tell you for the shoe, they'll tell you for the whole shoe's journey from literally
the chain
from manufacturer to your front door.
Yeah.
And they make their shoes 100% out of natural materials, so different plants, natural rubber, cork, everything on those lines. And then when you finish with the shoe, they got a service where you post a shoe back to them and they recycle it. So the shoe never ends up in landfill, always is turned into another shoe or something else. And it's it's a really, really good brand. And they're they haven't been going long. They're a very small company, but they're really making decent headway in the environment side of things, because the issue of running shoes is that it is very, very environmentally costly. There's a lot of carbon involved in the traditional ways. Sometimes there'd be over 30 different processes in making a trainer.
Yeah.
3D printing is improving that. And the old way of the lasts and the shoes always used to end up in landfill. So we're changing that over time. But it is sometimes it's a logistical nightmare of actually, okay, you've got these shoes. How do we actually dismantle these shoes, turn them into different things? And companies are now really starting to try and solve that problem. And Hilo, to my knowledge, are the first company really to just tackle it
head on. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, thanks for telling me about those. I'll have to get a pair in because I'm writing a, they've also got a pair. They're not too expensive as well, which is brilliant.
No.
The average shoe price now is £140. Can you believe that? And the shoes I've just been testing today, £185. Who's got the kind of money to spend on a shoe? But these, I just saw a pair there for £100. So I'll have to get that in my budget shoe test.
No, and they have, they have made great improvements with their shoes. It's been fantastic to be involved and watch their journey as they go through. So I call them, they're my naked running shoe. It's a shoe I use if I run and I don't wear any tech, anything. I'm not worried about speed, time or anything. And I wear them to work. So it's literally, if I come home, literally swap my work shorts for running shorts, and literally within 2 minutes, I'm out running.
Yeah.
Again, or if it's that, if you need a quick run, 20 minutes for lunch, you want to go out for a run during lunchtime and you could just get out and just go.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty. So then what would be, if someone's thinking about, actually listening to this, and I'm really excited about the prospects of trail running and start doing some more, what would be your sort of three biggest tips for runners who are, or people, not runners, anyone in general, who's actually, I want to start doing more of this. How do I go about it?
What, doing more running, or are they runners already that want to do trail
running? Anyone. So we're seeing a lot of people who, during lockdown, during the pandemic, they really realized that actually some of their other sports they couldn't do. Because they couldn't go to the golf club, tennis club, or anything on those lines. And they started doing more running. And then they also found the benefits. We know that actually, if you talk about running and not just running, exercise in general, it is the best way to manage depression. It's better than any pill that you can have out there. And you've got the mental health benefits of it. So we're finding many people that are, and it's almost like your story where you're saying, I never thought I'd be a runner. They start doing it and and they just get hooked. Actually, do you know what? I'm really enjoying it. It's my personal time. It's all about me having a break. So we're finding more and more people are starting getting a little bit curious about saying, well, maybe do I venture to off-road, or I haven't done anything before. Actually, what do I need to do to sort of get me going in the right direction?
The first thing I would do is to treat it as an adventure, like a bit of exploration. So I know it's a podcast, but anyone who's watching on the video will see there's a map of my local area behind me on my wall. It's a map wallpaper that I've got. So where I live is in the middle, and I can have a look at the map and I can see if there's any sort of hills or anything interesting that I want to explore nearby. So the way that you would do that is you'd buy an OS map of your local area, and you would look on the legend, the key, to see what dotted lines paths look like. So if you've got a 1 to 25,000 map, you'd have the green dotted and dashed lines for paths. And if you're looking at 1 to 50,000, like if you're in Scotland or somewhere, then you'd be looking at the pink dotted lines. But usually you'd probably be getting the 1 to 25,000 OS map of your local area, and it's got loads of green dotted lines on. And so you look for those, and they are footpaths, basically. We're really blessed in the UK that we've got about near almost 30,000 miles of footpaths that we can legally walk on in the UK, in England and Wales. So that would be the first place I would start. I would plot a little route to like the next village, but on footpaths rather than the road. Or if you're out running and you always see dog walkers like heading into a field, and there's a sign above it saying footpath, just go and explore in there. The top tip I would give for exploring is to turn round every sort of 5 or 10 minutes and take a photo of what's that way, because then if you turn round, you'll know what to look for on the way back. Don't think you always have to do a circular route. If you're going out doing this exploratory type of run, it's just as good to run out and back, because then you stand much less chance of getting lost when you're just starting to kind of build up your map reading skills. So I would definitely get a map of the local area. Look for like bodies of water. There's a big body of water behind me. It's called Rutland Water. You can actually run all the way around that on really easy to navigate paths. Running around water bodies is absolutely fantastic, because you just need to like keep the water to your left or right, and that's really easy to navigate. There's also like patches of green as well. That's forestry. If you see lots of tracks and footpaths through a forest, that usually means that there's lots going on there. There might even be a cafe. It might be managed by the Forestry Commission. There might be preset like paths with like different colours on that you can run different distances on, already waymarked for you. So definitely check one of those out that's local to you as well. National Trust properties and Forestry Commission land usually caters for runners and walkers and cyclists really well. So just do a little bit of exploring in your local area. And then also just like run from home. Like you can just run into your local park and run, like there might be a little wooded section in the park that you've just never been on before because the path doesn't go through there, but there might be like a little snaky path that runs through it. Just explore everything, and you might come across really exciting things. Like there might be a big statue in the middle of nowhere or a monument or something, and you'll find yourself picking up like maybe 2 or 3, maybe even 10 local routes that you really know and love. And then one day you'll be like, oh, I haven't run that one for a long time, and you'll feel motivated to go and see what's there. You'll be going motivated to see it in different seasons, or maybe see it on a night run and something like that. So definitely use trail running as an excuse to go exploring. That is for a first tip. And then I have a tip about getting motivated. A lot of people, like especially I'm surrounded by like new mums at the moment, because I've got a 1.5-year-old. So we've got I have a few friends in a WhatsApp group, and they're like, oh my God, how do you motivate yourself to go running? And my top tip here would be, if you just don't really feel like running, if you're not particularly calling yourself a runner, put stuff that you can run in on. So for women, that means a good sports bra. And then for everyone else, just like trainers and comfy clothing that's not too hot. And just go for a walk. Just tell yourself, I'll just go for a walk. So you go for a walk and, you know, your mind wakes up. But after about 5 minutes, you're looking around and you're like, maybe I could do a little jog. So you start doing a little jog, and then you might walk again, and then you might jog again, and then you might jog for the rest of it, or you might walk for the rest of it. But if you just get out there and do something, then it might lead to a run. So that's what I do if I'm feeling really tired. If in like 15 minutes I still feel really tired, sometimes I'll just go home. But if you don't do it, you won't do it. So just get out there for that walk. And then tip number 3, so we've done exploring, we've done staying motivated. Tip number 3, I think, would be to have an aim, because like races are brilliant for that, but it doesn't always have to be a race. It could be like, see Rutland Water behind me, that's 15 miles all the way around. You could say, right, in 3 months' time, I want to be fit enough to run around Rutland Water. So you can gradually up your distance if that's what you want to do. Or maybe you want to do a park run in a certain time. So you're like, oh, I want to do a park run in 30 minutes. So you gradually, you go to park run religiously every week for 3 months, and you do a little bit of interval training to get yourself, get your legs ticking over faster. And yeah, just to have an aim, because it's fine to just float along if you're motivated like that, but a lot of people are motivated by having an end goal. Doesn't necessarily need to be self-improvement either. Like if you can already run 15 miles around Rutland Water, maybe you want to run 15 miles around some other water. Maybe you've got like a location goal in mind, a destination goal in mind. Maybe you want to tie in a race with a holiday, something like that, just to give you something to look forward to and a reason to get out of the door. That would be my third tip.
They are amazing tips. And I really like the, it's funny how you talk about just putting some clothes on, go for a walk, and you may end up doing a bit of running.
Yeah, put the right clothes on, get in the costume. It's like an actor on a stage, you know, like get in the costume. And then if you want to run, you've facilitated going for a run.
Well, it's funny you say that, because we have our own, it's basically our version of the Couch to 5K. It's just because and we found some patients that, around week 12, I think, is the Couch to 5K. It ramps up a bit, and we get a few patients who get a few niggles at that stage. So we basically created what we called a 0 to 40, which is no running to 40 minutes of running in 16 weeks.
Okay.
And to help people with that, in the early days, it is a lot of walk, running, just because we know by doing that, you're going to reduce your risk of overdoing it, and then hopefully reduce the risk of getting injuries as well. And then also has some common strengthening exercises to then you do alongside that as well. And it is just that walk running is a really great way, I feel, to get in, start doing stuff, because like it doesn't really matter. It's like we say to patients all the time, it's there is no hard and fast rule when you're coming back from an injury. You will be back running at this X day after injury. It doesn't work like that. We're human beings. We all have loads of other factors that contribute to injuries. So some of it is just, well, let's just go and test the water. Let's just give it a go and just see what happens. And then the more you then do it, then the more confident you feel, and you then just keep pushing yourself forward. So I really, really like that tip. And then I also really liked that last tip as well. Also, I think that's a really, really good thing. So they're actually three really good tips. And the OS, the OS map and taking the photos, I've never really thought of actually just turning around and taking a photo. So then that you could then use that to help navigate your way back if you're nervous around getting lost.
The other thing about navigating is like if you see like a big thing, you know, like a spire or one of those mobile phone masts, like we've got one in our local quarry, and when I was exploring all around that, like that area, like over there, I would often go, oh goodness me, I've gone through so many fields now, I don't know where I am. And I'd see that mast and I'd be like, oh, I live near there. Look for the high things.
I tried that in airport park, when you park your car in the airports. You take a photo and you still get lost. You'd be like, I'm in Green Sea Section 2, and you're like,
yeah, where is that?
I took a photo of this.
Car parks with the key, like going beep, beep.
Yeah, that's what you do. I mean, go
around like over that, there, the mile like over that. There, yeah. Quick before someone nicks it.
And again, as I say, that last tip about the goals. When someone comes to see us, we ask them, "What does your goal want to be?" And your goal doesn't have to be to reach the fit UTMB. The goal could be just going for a walk with the family on a Sunday. It doesn't matter what that goal is, but I think having a goal gives you something to map towards, so you can then build a structured approach of how am I going to achieve this goal. And then there's also then lots of tips on your YouTube channel as well.
Yes, it's supposed to be helpful. There's lots of advice there from elite athletes, from really top coaches, from nutritionists, sports dietitians, everything really is covered on there. And I think the best way to navigate getting information out of my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running, is to actually, if you've got a query, type that query into Google, like say best nutrition for running, and then after that just put Wild Ginger Running, and whatever I've got on the topic should come up either in my website or via a film, especially if you click on the videos tab of Google as well. So I think that that is the best search engine. You could also use the YouTube search engine as well. That's the second most used search engine after Google, actually. But usually Googling the you know, if you want to know, I do a lot of gear reviews. If you want to know about hiking poles or running shoes, then you can just Google that, and plus Wild Ginger Running, it should bring up whatever. There's tons of tips on that. And also, if you want to write me a comment on the on my YouTube channel, if you under the films, you can write comments, and I answer every single person. So if you have got a question about trail running or running in general or motivation or nutrition, then just write me a comment and I will reply to you with the video, if I've got a video on it.
Now that's amazing. And I think because don't Google own YouTube also.
That's why the tagging works.
So now I try and keep these episodes 30 minutes, and I think we're currently around 43.
Are we? I didn't know what the time
and
was.
I could happily speak for another hour quite and it just sort of showed. I looked down the clock and I thought, I'm overrun.
No. Have you got more questions? I can do speed answering.
I have, yeah. Let's do sort of five top questions, speed questions. A favourite event?
Favourite event? Oh, Manx Mountain Marathon. I'm doing it this year, a decade on. It's 50K and it's in the Isle of Man.
Okay. Favourite shoe?
At the moment, it's the Altra Timp 4, but if only it wasn't zero drop, might put an insole in.
And favourite sort of fuel source?
I'm currently loving Morton. It's what Killian Jornet uses. Actually, Eliud Kipchoge uses it as well. I really hate gels, but these gels are like jelly and they're not too sweet, so I love them.
Yeah. And one more question. Let's go for something completely random. Let's go.
Favorite podcast?
I was going to go more simple. I was going to go, you're a pizza or burger person?
I am probably pizza or veggie burger. I've become a little bit more veggie planty. I do eat meat still, but I've become a bit more because of the sustainability issues and the chopping of the rainforest down for beef, etc. I've become a bit more veggified, so nice veggie burger or halloumi burger or nice pizza. Yeah, I like both, really. It depends what day it is.
Depends what day of the week it is. It's, for our family birthdays, people come around to ours and we got a pizza oven and a barbecue, and it's normally both are on at the same time. Because
heaven.
Yeah, it's completely random. Nothing talking. If you ever get the chance to get a pizza oven, it's the best sort of garden cooking sauce. Like, cook a pizza in 30 seconds in a minute, it's great stuff for the family. Like, I've got a two-year-old and a four-year-old, so they help out making the doughs and everything on those lines, and it's a great little, it gets messy and whatnot, but it's just great fun with the kids to do stuff with the family. And
Oh, that sounds lovely. Yeah, my husband did talk about getting one, and I was like, oh, that sounds difficult, why can't we just put it in the oven? But yeah, my friend got
once you've had a pizza from a proper pizza oven,
I know what you mean. Yeah,
it you'll never have oven pizza again, because you're like, the taste is just so much better.
It really is.
I think it's because the normal ovens just can't get hot enough.
So
really, one other thing quickly is, obviously you've got a young little one.
Yeah, one and a half-ish.
I used to, during lockdown, my youngest was one and my eldest was just three, I think, or just under one, just under one and just coming up to three. So I actually used to help keep out and going doing stuff. A lot of our local woods put on like little gruffalo trails and whatnot. And I used to take the kids out on buggies, and we've actually got three different buggies depending on whether they're single buggies, double buggies, an off-road running buggy, and then the normal buggy. Have you ever done any sort of buggy running or anything along those lines?
Oh yeah, every week at parkrun. Yeah, I take Finley to parkrun every week, and we run with the buggy. We use the mountain buggy terrain. I really like it because it's
the one I got.
Wheel. Yeah, I really like the swivelly wheel. Somebody told me that you're supposed to lock it when you go running, otherwise it can tip over. But I'm like, I don't run that fast. I still have it on swivel, even if I'm running, because I just can't be bothered with pushing down to move it from side to side to lift the wheel up at the front. But yeah, I like that buggy. In all honesty, I hate running with a running buggy. I find it really annoying. I only run with a running buggy if I don't have any childcare other childcare options. So it puts about 3 to 5 minutes on my park run best time.
Yeah.
So I have a buggy PB and a post-birth PB and then a PB for when I was young and fit. but I think running buggies are brilliant. But if I had the choice, I would definitely not run with a buggy because it's just a massive back.
Like, it is fat and it is hard work. Can't use your arms. And for me,
it's
work
than not running, so it's good for that reason.
Yeah, I think I remember that ours. I think I weighed, including buggy and children, everything. It was an extra like 40 kilograms.
Oh, I don't know how these people, they're overtaking me at park run with two children in there. They are men, but that's really, really, really amazing. There's a lot of very fit people at our park run. And I have done a running buggy test. If anybody's interested, if you type in running buggies while ginger running, you'll see that me and my friend Julia, who had a baby at quite a similar time to me, we did a test of 6 of them. So you really get to see the ins and outs of each different type of buggy. And 2 of them are ones that you can also, they're also bike trailers, so you can hook them to the back of your bike. And I use that quite a lot as well, actually for getting the shopping. I get the food shop in that to try and be more eco-friendly rather than using the car. And when it comes to winter, Finley will go in that to go to nursery because it'll be a bit warmer for him to go in the sheltered little trailer rather than in the bike seat on the back of the bike. Lots of options there.
One of the companies we work with, Run3D, they the founder, Jessica Leach, she was the world record holder for a marathon in buggy.
Yeah, right. I saw her interviewed. Yeah. And all I could think of was, like, it's 3 hours 20 or something like that, isn't it, her record? I was just like, how on earth do you get your kids to stay in the buggy without yowling for 3 hours? Like, does she just do that on the marathon day? Or does she practice taking them in the buggy for 3 hours? Because I just think that's not fair on kids, surely. Like, all respect to her for pushing the buggy for that far, but I don't know if I'd want to do that to Finley.
No, they're used to it, though. The kids are, she's a massive runner. Her and her husband are massive runners.
Yeah.
And they've always went out running as a family, and they didn't want to stop running when children come. So now she doesn't do it because the kids are older, that they're not in the buggies now. But yeah, it was, I did say to her, I sort of said, I have issues sometimes, my mind, we're a little younger, keeping them in a buggy for an hour occupied. Yeah. How do you manage 3 hours? And she sort of, we just planned the marathon times around nap time, so they would have their naps.
Yeah, 2 hour naps and then
2 hour naps
each side. Yeah,
in the buggy, and had the half hour each side, and it used to be just planned.
Yeah.
Around that, and then unfortunately, she lost the record because her husband beat her.
Oh, what a! How annoying. Was that planned?
It wasn't planned. No, wow. It just happened, and it was But again, 3 hours 20. There are many people happily with that time without a buggy.
Yeah, what's her time without a buggy then? It must be sub-3, surely.
And I think she's pushing around that. I've known her for a number of years now. We will go out running when we're at events. And yeah, it's always like when Jess says to me, "Next, we go for a run," I'm like, hang on, are we going for a Jess run or are we going for a Nick run? What type of run are we going on here?
Yeah.
You need to warn me.
Gosh, it's amazing. I suppose if you've done it from such a young age and planned it around their naps, I wonder how they plan around the London Marathon, because that's a set time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it'd be a tricky one. But if they've done it for that long, but I have, like, Finley, when he's not got a cold and doesn't fall asleep at parkrun, he he's like writhing around after 20 minutes going, "Mom," and that makes me speed up actually. So yeah, he's just writhing around after 20 minutes. He's like, wants to get out and go on his bike.
Mom, I need a wee type thing.
Oh, yeah, well, he's still in nappies because he's only like 19 months old. So I don't have to worry about that yet.
Yeah, just wait till you have that happen and then they're not in nappies and then you have to keep sopping and then...
Yeah.
Yeah. But I just want to say a massive thank you for coming on and chatting with us. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. I think that's been shown by the time.
Thanks, they were great questions. Really enjoyed it. And I hope that it helps some of the people that listen to your podcast, like some of your podiatry people.
No, thank you very much. So thank you for tuning in and listening to this month's podcast. We will put all the details for Claire's sort of YouTube details and the book in all of the comments. So if you do have any questions for myself or Claire, please do get in touch. And we shall see you on the next episode. See you later. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Right, let's stop recording.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.